Sometimes you just want the quick facts. No opinions, no speculation. I'm Claire Thornton, an audio editor with USA Today. My team works around the clock to bring you the Five Things podcast. Every morning, me and my co-host Taylor Wilson help you know what to keep an eye out for that day. We always have a fresh mix of stories, from politics to entertainment to sports, covering all parts of the country. On Sundays, you can lean back with in-depth episodes about stories you may have heard earlier that week. Go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite shows and start listening to Five Things today.
Inside Florida Politics, powered by USA Today Florida Network. Ron DeSantis' presidential campaign finally flames out. DeSantis immediately jumps on the Trump train, and Florida could soon be getting a lot more attention from the defeated governor. Hello, I'm Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson, and those are some of the stories I'll be discussing today with Gannett State Capitol reporter John Kennedy and Palm Beach Post politics editor Antonio Finns. But first... Well, there are a ton of numbers that tell the story of DeSantis' failed presidential campaign, but unfortunately, I can only pick one, and the number I am going with is 99, and no, that is not a Jay-Z reference, although DeSantis definitely has at least 99 problems, if not more. John, you want to tell us about your number?
Yeah, Zach, my number this week is 110,298.
All right, John going big. How about you, Antonio?
Well, you know, when John goes high, I go low. I'm going just simple 210.
210. All right. Remember those numbers, folks. We'll let you know what they mean in Florida politics at the end of the show. Well, 6 days after his beatdown in Iowa, DeSantis finally called it quits on a presidential campaign that has really been on the ropes for, since the beginning, with a failed launch on Twitter, dysfunction throughout the campaign. Really struggling to gain traction with voters, not really having a lane between the Trump's base and some of the never Trumpers. John, it kind of felt like this is sort of a presidential campaign that might be taught one day in political science classes about sort of textbook how not to run a campaign.
Oh, it does. It seems like the DeSantis failure is one worth studying. It's leaving a lot of trail markings for future candidates who may get to a similar spot, the message basically being that they should do just the opposite of what Ron DeSantis did. Maybe the first is timing. We've talked about, before about how DeSantis was at his peak shortly after the November 2022 elections.
Yeah, a lot of people think he kind of got out of the gate too slowly here, that really he needed to strike while the iron was hot, while Trump was wounded, and kind of, sometimes in politics, you got to kick them when they're down and really take advantage of your opponent's vulnerabilities.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. That was, recall, 2022, Trump was being blamed by Republicans again for losing the U.S. Senate to a Democratic majority and for barely capturing the House without the red wave that many thought was coming. DeSantis, by contrast, won re-election in Florida by 19 percentage points. He was riding very high. But DeSantis did not announce his candidacy then when conservatives were taking shots at Trump. Instead, DeSantis returned to Tallahassee and kept, rolling out red meat policies for the next 6 months before finally announcing that he was running for president. That gave Trump time to get up off the carpet and begin drawing sympathy from his followers for the first of what became four criminal indictments that he would eventually draw.
And it also, John, it gave Trump time to really define DeSantis. I mean, he was absolutely merciless in going after DeSantis even before DeSantis won re-election in November of 2022. He was already taking shots at him, and that continued all the way up until DeSantis launched his campaign in May, and obviously all the way up until DeSantis quit the race. I mean, he defined him as de-sanctimonious and kind of there were all different kinds of attacks, labeled him Meatball Ron, all these different things, was already putting out ads against him before he was even in the race. And DeSantis really didn't respond throughout that whole period and just let those attacks go unresponded to. What do you think about that?
He should have, given voters some reason to vote for him over Trump. Draw a sharp contrast between the front runner, who was Trump. But at that point, Trump was maybe not quite the front runner that he later became. Zach, I know you've always been a follower of the mantra once espoused by country singer Jerry Reed: when you hot, you hot. And DeSantis was hot.
I actually have that tattooed on my arm, John.
it never happened for DeSantis. And, when you think back to, he was overly confident with the millions of dollars that he was taking in from donors, all the smart money in the party, just like Florida's Jeb Bush found in 2016, that established money is no indicator that you know where the party voters are going. And then, of course, he wound up, churning through staff in both his campaign and his super PAC. He had a flailing message that an unwillingness to criticize his main rival, Trump, and really a failure to present a reason why he was really a better candidate than Trump. Those are all textbook lessons from the DeSantis campaign. And, now, of course, he's returning to Tallahassee with, some advisors and maybe his own aspirations, saying that 2028 is in his future. But, I think Trump said it. Only if he gets a personality transplant is Ron DeSantis capable of coming back in 2028. Because, perhaps DeSantis's biggest failure of this campaign was his inability to connect with voters and present himself as an inspiring leader for this country. Candidates can learn from Trump. You have to like people to run for president.
When we come back, now that DeSantis has kissed Trump's ring, we talk about what their relationship could be like going forward. Talked about this before. I think DeSantis did get better as a candidate throughout the campaign. He became a little bit more fluid in his presentation, a little bit lighter on his feet, a little bit less scripted. But in general, he still really did stick to the script. And it did seem like he just had trouble fully connecting with voters and just loosening up and kind of throwing off some of the tightness that he just kind of seems to have. He was so policy focused, so detail focused. He really has a granular command of some of these issues, but he seemed to get lost in the weeds and never really pulled himself out of that and gave a bigger picture and gave sort of a more emotional, inspiring picture. He was very methodical in how he presented himself. You mentioned 2028. I think one reason, one example that you can point to that he still does have designs on 2028 is just how quickly, Antonio, that DeSantis endorsed Trump. In his dropout video, he immediately backed Trump, bent the knee after. Towards the end of the campaign, he was sort of mocking Trump and saying, "Oh, you could be the worst Republican in the world, but if you bend the knee, he'll think you're great." And then he immediately bends the knee to him. It seems like he wants to inherit that MAGA base still, and he knows that he's going to need that if he ever wants to run again, and that he has to make nice with Trump, even though Trump absolutely savaged him. And that's kind of what Trump does. He sort of forces people to eventually kiss his ring. And DeSantis was very quick to do that.
Yeah, but let's pump the brakes a bit on the 2028 talk for DeSantis, because in addition to everything that you and John have just spoken about, that on the national stage he was not a good candidate. Now, does he learn his lessons and do better next time around? Perhaps, but he seemed to have burned a lot of money to simply just punch his ticket out of Iowa. But the bigger problem is this that he's going to have. And that is that when you think about Trump, the brand is MAGA. The brand is America First. But the most important word in that universe is loyalty. Loyalty is the glue that holds the entire movement together. It's why his followers look past four sets of criminal indictments with 91 felonies because they believe that Trump will be loyal to them, to them, and therefore they are loyal to Trump no matter what. And the problem is that DeSantis violated that loyalty oath. He went against Trump in an arena where he was widely seen as having benefited from Trump's endorsement back in 2018 to win the governor's race in the first place.
Right. And some people might wonder, Antonio, how does this differ from like past primaries? You know, Trump and Lindsey Graham went at each other pretty hard. Trump and Ted Cruz went at each other pretty hard in 2016. And Lindsey Graham is now apparently pretty close with him. But
Marco Rubio,
you know,
Marco
Rubio. Marco Rubio, little Marco. And then Marco Rubio endorses Trump right before the Iowa caucus, you know, after really being embarrassed by him in the 2016 campaign. It does seem like DeSantis is different, though, because his political career really does depend to a large degree on Trump. If Trump hadn't endorsed him in his primary against Adam Putnam, he very well likely wouldn't have won that race. So there is more of that, you know, loyalty aspect to it.
There is. And that's the precise reason that, yeah, these people that you mentioned, you know, Lindsey Graham, Marco Rubio, do not owe their political careers to Trump. Trump sees that basically that DeSantis owed him. And, you know, DeSantis ran against him at the moment that Trump, Trump was down, that he was, you know, almost out of this race. I mean, almost a little bit more than a year ago, a lot of people were writing him off, and here comes DeSantis. So there was in all of these attacks, a three-finger pudding ad that Trump, you know, rifled off at DeSantis last year, all of these attacks seemed really personal. Now, here's the thing that I was at a Trump speech in October in West Palm Beach, and he said something really interesting. He said that, you know, DeSantis could forget about 2028. All right, that's in the heat of battle. But then he said, I can never forget the disloyalty. Now, he didn't say I can never forgive the disloyalty. He said I can never forget the disloyalty, which suggests that maybe DeSantis can get back in the MAGA line. Yeah. Back in the
I
MAGA
mean, Trump is very transactional, isn't he? In the end... Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I could see him holding a grudge. I also think that he definitely holds grudges. But in the end, if DeSantis plays ball and helps him out.
Yeah, you know. But here's the thing. Here's where I think the rubber will meet the road when we start talking about 2028. Yeah, DeSantis gets back in line, but he's not going to be, I don't think, at the front of the line as he was before. He was really
Who knows? Don Jr. could be running. You could see Matt Gaetz or any of these other MAGA Republicans running.
Or let's say in the presidential race, let's say Kristi Noem of South Dakota, the governor of South Dakota, that state, she was talked about as a potential candidate, and she backed off. You know, she was loyal. Is Trump going to back DeSantis over Kristi Noem? What about in Florida? Let's say Marco Rubio decides, enough of the U.S. Senate. He moves out. Okay, you know, DeSantis could be a candidate for U.S. Senate. He is still popular in Florida. But what about if Byron Donalds throws his hat in the ring? You know, Byron Donalds is loyal. He didn't run against Trump. In fact, Byron Donalds is out on CNN with the quote unquote, you know, radical left media defending Trump all the time. So I think there are others who are going to say, hey, hold up a second. You know, you were disloyal. I've been loyal. And I think that's going to be another challenge that the governor is going to have.
And there was an interesting development late last night where there's been a bill that was floated to fund Trump's legal bills with taxpayer dollars in Florida. And DeSantis tweeted out that, you know, the Republican who holds the veto pen doesn't support this bill, basically saying no way that this is going to pass. So that was interesting. You know, I mean, he's endorsing Trump, he's bending the knee, but he also still seems to want to, you know, have some independence there, and he's not willing to fund Trump's legal bills with taxpayer money.
That's a great point, Zach, because we're talking about how Trump sees DeSantis, but that kind of also tells us a little bit about how DeSantis still sees Trump, and DeSantis does have agency here. He does have a say. He will be. He's got this session and two more. To run things in Florida. So I pumped the brakes on 2028, but there's partly because there's just a lot that has to be sorted out.
When we come back, now that DeSantis's presidential campaign is over, we look at what the last 3 years of his term as governor could be like in Tallahassee. DeSantis's presidential campaign might be over, but he still has almost 3 years leftist governor, John, and he's coming back to Tallahassee licking his wounds, but there's a lot that he can still do in the legislature. You know, the legislature has been very deferential to him. They've really passed a lot of the last few legislative sessions have revolved almost entirely around pushing big conservative bills that he could tout on the campaign trail in Iowa, which is what he immediately did with bills like the ban on abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy. What do you think DeSantis does here? Do you think that he comes back and cools it off a little bit, that he doesn't really need to get a lot of this conservative policy passed, or that he comes back itching to show what he can do and set himself up for 2028?
Well, you know, a lot of attention was paid to Ron DeSantis's boots and his heels. Well, now we're going to find out what a rebooted Ron DeSantis is going to look like. There are plenty of divisive culture war bills out there in the Florida legislature that he could re-engage with. They're protecting Confederate monuments, making doctors liable for legal damages stemming from abortions. And there's bills banning gay pride flags in local governments. All those are kind of things that are right in DeSantis's wheelhouse. But this war on woke for DeSantis was, as one Democratic legislator told me, it was a dud. It really didn't resonate that much for him nationally. But really, all told, I'm just guessing at this point, but I think it's possible that DeSantis keeps a lower profile when he reemerges as governor. Not too low. I think he'll find ways to attack the Biden administration over inflation and the border policy, things that are seen as helping Republicans nationally headed toward the November elections.
And it does seem, John, that DeSantis is a true believer with a lot of this stuff. You know, some of it maybe was positioning for Iowa. He didn't really do a lot with abortion during his first few years as governor. And that really did seem like that was trying to appeal to evangelicals in Iowa. So, you know, maybe you don't see as much of some of those social conservative policies going forward, but his effort to remake the education system, to remake the administrative state, to really put his conservative stamp on government, it seems like he really believes strongly in some of these things.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe he'd even try to take on things like property insurance, whose costs are plaguing Floridians. If he could improve that, he'd go a long way toward boosting what, you know, maybe an emerging sign of DeSantis fatigue in Florida right now. I think his fellow Republican leaders in Florida may be looking to have a legislative session for the next 2 months without a lot of protests and criticism as they all head for elections this fall. And, I think you may see DeSantis take something of a backseat to the national presidential race. Maybe he becomes again just sort of a protege to Trump like he used to be and, eager to do the then like he was in 2020, you know, eager to do the then president's bidding to curry favor with the party. And DeSantis really has a long, long way to come back if he wants to appear relevant again. If he does think that 2028 is a possibility for him, he's going to have to regenerate goodwill and doing stuff that seems aimed chiefly at shining a light on himself. I don't think that's going to do it. I think the old Yale baseball captain is going to have to be a team player for the rest of this year.
And a lot of people have said that some of these really critical issues in Florida, like property insurance, like affordable housing, fentanyl crisis, other things have kind of taken a back seat to some of the more partisan stuff that appeals to primary voters. You think potentially this gives him a window to kind of settle back and try and make some progress on some of these really tricky problems that maybe don't get as much headlines?
Yeah. Try to look gubernatorial for a while. Do stuff that maybe helps his state. And, the state is turning red, as we've written about a lot. I mean, it's gone beyond turning red. It is red. So voters like a lot of what DeSantis does. So if he just plays to that, I guess, you know, that does cross into some of the culture war issues, which seem to resonate with Florida voters and Fox News. But it's these things that are so divisive in the state, though, too, because Florida still has a lot of Democrats no party affiliates, and just a lot of people that repel at some of these issues that seem to try to marginalize communities like the transgender community, Black voters, LGBTQ voters generally, and school children. I think a lot of parents are questioning some of this stuff that winds up with, book bans all over the state. And it's time to maybe tamp that down a bit. And maybe going forward, DeSantis tries to thread that needle somehow, tamping it down, but at the same time, still promoting parental rights and, the role of state government in, setting the tone away from some of these more liberal cities that enact things that Republicans hate.
Yeah, it's been a pretty intense political environment in Florida over the last couple of years, and people have really been at each other's throats. We'll see if there's a little bit of a de-escalation now that his presidential ambitions have fallen flat. Well, we'll move on to some numbers here. Antonio, you want to tell us about yours?
Yeah, I have 210, as in 210 seconds or 3.5 minutes. And that's how long, almost 6 years ago, it took a shooter to walk into Marjorie Stoneman Douglas and in a rampage killed 17 students and staff and wound many others. And the reason I bring this up isn't just because the anniversary looms on February 14th, but because yesterday I covered a roundtable up in Coral Springs that was led by U.S. Secretary of Education Miguel Cardona, who was in town to basically tour the building where the shooting took place. The local congressman, Jared Moskowitz, whose district covers Parkland, where the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School is, as well as Southern Palm Beach County, he's been sort of hosting these closed media tours of the building to try to elevate the discussion and just keep the memory of the students and the staff that were killed, but also to basically highlight the fact that we still need to do a lot more to protect schools. So after the tour, there was an hour and a half discussion. Some of the surviving family members of the Parkland victims were there. They participated. And a lot of the discussion had to do with ways to protect schools, school resource officers, which are sort of like good guys with guns, and putting automatic locks on doors and film on windows. And then there was a lot of discussion about mental illness and say something to the right person and then sharing information. So a lot of the discussion was on that. But it did strike me that there's a lot that goes into keeping kids safe at school these days. And after the discussion, I asked Cardona, I said, listen, why is this such a unique American problem? And he talked about the availability of AR-15s. And that was really one of the first times that actually gun measures got into the conversation. And, I'll wrap up by just simply saying that, there's a lot being done to protect schools. And schools are certainly safer than they were on February 14th of 2018. But at the same time, whether you're out in public or you're out in the shopping center or at a movie theater or in a school, it is kind of a uniquely American phenomenon and tragedy that you are at risk of a mass shooting. Because in every other risk that we take, whether it's driving in a car, or getting in a car accident, global terrorism, those are things that are just prevalent all over the planet. But the mass shootings does seem to be a uniquely American phenomena, and we are still living, and particularly in schools, living with the legacy of the shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. A lot of loss, a lot of heartbreak, a lot has been done to try to prevent it from happening again, but it's still a very complicated legacy.
Yeah, definitely a really sad and important issue that deserves a lot of discussion going forward to try and prevent some of these shootings. John, you want to tell us about your number?
Well, Zach, I'm still frozen in Iowa, as you once were, and my
I'm
number
still thawing out. It was really, really cold, bitter cold.
Yeah, I've got to get some more detail from you on just how bad was it. But 110,298. Well, that's the number of Iowa Republicans who took part in the recent caucuses that ultimately led to Ron DeSantis's exit from the presidential race. As we said, DeSantis finished second, 30 points behind Trump, and he spent $35 million in Iowa to get there. You got to wonder about, presidential politics in America. Some of it is, partially rooted in that 110,298 Iowans can have so much outsized influence. Think about it. After that Iowa vote, they've killed off DeSantis, Vivek Ramaswamy, left Nikki Haley teetering onto New Hampshire, where she needs to really gain some loft or begin her own exit strategy, I suppose. And Iowa has made Trump seemingly invincible on his path to the Republican nomination. Political scientists have talked about the need for some better system of selecting a nominee. You know, ideas are maybe a group of similar sized states holding nominating events the same day, something like a, you know, more Super Tuesday style days, I guess, or maybe a handful of regional primary contests. Those are all kind of concepts that are out there. But, you know, 110,298 Iowa Republicans isn't even a lot in Iowa. There are about 630,000 registered Republicans in Iowa, and most of them stayed home for that caucus, for the caucuses. But they were those that did show up were basically enough to show DeSantis the door.
Yeah, you make a good point. It really is a very small and fairly unrepresentative group of voters that have a huge amount of sway in the presidential nominating caucus. Well, my number is also Iowa related. It's 99, as in DeSantis campaigned in 99 Iowa counties, and he won exactly zero of them. Trump won 98 of the counties, and Nikki Haley won one county. So much for DeSantis's much vaunted ground game in Iowa. I mean, this was all that his campaign talked about for months and months, as the polls showed him just continuing to sink farther below Trump, and Haley climbing on him. They were constantly pointing to their organization in Iowa and saying, you know, just watch, we've got all these door knockers, we've got people, volunteers on the ground, we've got the best organization of any campaign. And in the end, it did make a little bit of a difference. DeSantis was polling in third place going into Iowa and outperformed the polls. He beat Nikki Haley for second place. Some analysts that I saw, it looked like maybe that his ground game helped him between 2 and 5 percentage points, but really nowhere near enough. And it really came after months of him basically saying these polls are BS and worthless and nobody believes them. The polling was actually very close, very accurate in the end. DeSantis's ground game may have helped him outperform a little bit, but really not by much. And it just goes to show that, you know, you can have all the money in the world. You can, you know, set up the greatest campaign organization in the world, but if you're not a good candidate, if you leave voters cold, there is no amount of money that can save you. In the end, he wasn't able to connect with voters on an emotional level like Trump was. It really was a tale of two campaigns. When Trump checked the only box that really matters, though, and that's whether voters respond to you as on an emotional level as a candidate. DeSantis, it turns out, left a lot of voters colder than Iowa in January, and that's where his campaign froze to death. That wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our audio production guru, Rob Landers. Thanks to all of you for listening. We're out of here.